Time is 3:39 p.m. We're back on the record for the formal hearing continuation of OPAPA 16-007 and 16-011.
Okay, while we were off the record, we had a very brief discussion between the hearing officer and the parties, and we will be starting after today's hearing concludes at 9:30 a.m. on Friday, and we will start with Mr. Keeler's cross-examination of Sean Easter, followed by Ms. Tang's cross-examination, followed by Mr. AED's redirect. After that, we will then proceed with closing arguments. Mr. AED and Mr. Keeler requested that we move the deadline to file the remedies briefs until Friday of next week, to which I agreed. I will put up, or I'll re-emphasize that in a verbal order when the hearing concludes after closing. And there was also some discussion, or just to follow up on where Mr. Keeler was in getting the tapes done. He says he can do them, and he's still waiting to hear back to see how long it might take. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. Is that a fair and accurate summary of the discussion we had off record?
And also, any party's response to Cortex filing last week, it was some request that they had filed last week, request for a determination.
Yeah, that would, those would be due then on Friday next week,
okay.
So,
thank you.
As well. Okay. All right. Now that, except for Mr. Easter, now that for the rest of Mr. Easter's testimony on Friday, Mr. Aggie states that he's not going to call any more witnesses. Is that correct, Mr. Aggie?
That's correct.
Ms. Tang had a rebuttal witness. Ms. Tang, you may call your rebuttal witness.
Thank you. Mr. McKeough, please.
Mr. McKeough, please approach the witness stand. Good to see you again.
Thanks. How are you?
We've been through this before. Just not standing by this. So I ask that the you can take your drink with you. That's fine.
Yeah.
I ask that the witness be sworn. Be careful of the cords.
Yeah.
Please raise your right hand. Please state your name.
Michael McKeough.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm your testimony about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Ms. Ted, your witness for cross-examination.
Good afternoon, Mr. McKeough.
Good afternoon.
All right, so one of the issues that was discussed earlier today in the testimony of Ms. Gale, she is a project manager and civil engineer at the City Audi Architects.
Ms. Ted, can you get
I'm sorry.
Just a little closer.
Was whether A&E, architecture and engineering fees, were required to be included in the cost proposal, the estimates for the Simon Sanchez project. Is that your understanding? What is it? It should be included. Is that
yes.
Your understanding?
Yes.
Is that pretty much standard practice?
Yes.
Now let's talk about conceptual plans. There's also some discussions about conceptual plans. The conceptual plans, what are conceptual plans?
Usually it's the synthesis of any program information that's provided in whatever the solicitation document is. And so the designers will take that information, they study it, and they convert it into drawings, sketches, models that would depict physically how a space could be prepared so that it addressed all the different program elements that are identified.
So it would include, for instance, a layout of the, in this case,
plans, sections, elevations, perspectives.
Classrooms, corridors.
Yeah.
Bathrooms.
Yeah. Right, sometimes. Right.
Yep, okay. Trees, fake people.
Lots of fake people, yes.
Okay. In preparing did you prepare the conceptual plan for Cortec?
Yes, we did.
All right. And in preparing the conceptual plan for Cortec, what information did you look to in RFP to do that?
There was the exhibit with the list of the program spaces.
The exhibit A and the addendum six.
Six. Right. Addendum six, yeah.
Right, the revised one.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And was it difficult for your firm to prepare a conceptual plan based on the information provided in Exhibit A?
No.
So there was testimony earlier that there just wasn't enough information, wasn't enough detail. we can't tell how big classrooms or, you know, the kind of information that would be required to develop a conceptual plan. Do you agree?
No.
Why
you,
not?
You'll need more detail later on when you go to prepare the permit drawings, the
mm-hmm.
construction detail drawings.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point for conceptual design, it was adequate.
And what do you look at? Are there guidelines or resources out there that you would normally, architects in their profession,
absolutely.
Rely on?
Absolutely.
What would they include?
You know, you've got every jurisdiction puts out a document called Ed Specs.
What does that stand for?
Educational Specifications. It usually is a qualitative description of a particular type of classroom, so a science classroom or an English classroom or a band classroom. And then it kind of gives you qualitative characteristics, descriptions of the characteristics that you would expect to see. So in a band room, you'd expect them to say something like, need additional acoustic insulation, pretty standard. You know, if it were a laboratory, you'd say that you'd see in the specs that it would say, provide sinks and emergency eye wash, you know, things like that. So,
okay. How about if the classroom needed to meet a maximum capacity of 30 students, how would you determine how much space you would require?
There are guidelines that actually will tell you desirable square footages per student within a room. And so, you know, and by the way, it does vary from grade to grade. So in elementary schools, you'll get, you know, a value of, let's say, up to 32 square feet per student, so that you've got a desk space for the student, and then you've also got, like, play area or informal learning space area. In middle schools, that number actually reduces because you don't have kids taking naps anymore and doing those little playtime activities indoors. And then for high schools, that's actually probably it adjusts again, and it's probably the snuggest
really?
Value. Yeah. It's usually, again, we see values everything from 16 square feet per student up to like 20 or 24 square feet.
And on that basis, you calculate the room size.
Right.
And the ed specs may provide additional information for the type, based on the type of room it is, the use of the room, you may have additional specifications that would, as a guideline, would be included.
Yeah. And the ed specs is just one of many design guidelines and best management practices that we have available
to us. What are best management practices?
The American Institute of Architects, for example, puts out several training sessions and programs where they take architects and engineers through. I think the last time I was here, I spoke about there's actually an entire training program that talks about safety and security for students. So there are design parameters that you set into a design so that you can manage or mitigate the damage if you had a shooter on campus or if you had contamination on campus. So there are actually design guidelines that they give you to help with that. And you know, sometimes they're very straightforward. Even if it's a small classroom, put in a second door. That's something that we actually see in that because you have a way of allowing students to not be, I think the term they use, you don't want them to be herded. H-E-R-D-D, like as in cattle, where they're trapped and they're not able to get away.
I see. And in your opinion, was it harder to prepare a conceptual drawing or plan with Exhibit A than as compared to a more specific and detailed program?
For our team, it was actually easier.
Why is that?
Well, a lot of times when you're dealing with your clients, they know their profession, so teachers know how to teach, but they don't know how to describe spaces. That's left to facility planners,
mm-hmm.
people who, for their profession, study what spaces you need to have. Those are those references that we go to. So a lot of times when we're working with clients who are, I'm gonna be on PC for a moment. When we're working with clients that are over-opinionated, they know exactly the square footage of the classroom or the dimension of the classroom that they want to have, it's very possible that they're missing something. And it's something that, you know, facility planners would know about. So in our case, what we were able to do is we were able to apply those best management practices. I mean, we've done a lot of schools on Guam, so we have a good cachet of ideas and principles of what works and what doesn't work. And so we're able to already synthesize that into the concept. And then our procedure then is when we meet with the clients after, you know, we're brought into the project, it's officially launched, we sit in there and we explain to them the pros and cons of this design approach.
How many schools, if you recall, have you worked out on WAP over the years?
Okay, Ms. Fang, I think we've already been through this.
Okay.
Testimony.
I'll move on. So, there was testimony that, well, you know, Exhibit A could have more information, but it just wasn't enough information. In your opinion, does it relieve the proposer of complying with the minimum requirements of Exhibit A?
No. As a practice, we go by the minimum requirements. So if it's in that document, we treat it as a minimum requirement.
And do you agree that if there is a remedy, if they think there's not information, what do they do? If the proposer, the designer, preparing this conceptual drawing felt that Exhibit A was insufficient, there is a remedy or there is a way of getting information, correct?
Yeah, you would send in RFIs, you would send in requests.
And in your review of the RFIs, do you recall any proposer or packet pick up, what do they call it, people who pick up packets?
Bidders.
Bidders, yeah. Did you see any question saying Exhibit A is not designable? This is not enough information to prepare a conceptual plan.
I didn't look at it that way, but I don't think that occurred because I understand that every bidder presented a design.
Okay.
So it was designable.
There was testimony earlier this morning from a witness that, and I think this was a question from the public auditor, what would it have cost for Gov Guam to, and I hope I'm asking the right question, what would it have cost Gov Guam to prepare a conceptual design, 30%, no, is it, excuse me, a 30% conceptual design?
Sorry, those are actually two separate things. You can have a conceptual design or you could have a 30% design.
How about a conceptual design?
Okay. So with the conceptual design, it's actually a formula that we typically use.
Let me just tell you what the construction cost is. Assuming a construction cost, hard cost, not including all the soft costs and architecture, engineering fees and all that. Assuming it's $62 million.
Okay.
All right. What would roughly, how would you, you know, what would be the approximate cost you think to develop a conceptual design?
I don't know if I can do this in my head, but I can read it. I can.
Do you want a pen?
Oh. Sure, can I have something to read on? Oh, to write on?
Do you require a calculator?
You guys can do it for me.
Well, okay,
do
you have a calculator?
I do. I have a phone.
Okay, so we'll allow you to use the calculator, only your calculator on your phone.
Okay, understood.
Okay, and could you please tell us what you're doing?
Okay, you said the construction value was?
The hard cost, $63 million.
Okay, so we're going to multiply that by the average fee on or about 8%. Okay, times. So you're going to multiply that by 0.08. Okay, and then you're going to take that,
and you. What did that come out to?
That came out to 4.96 million.
4.96. Okay.
Right. Okay, so then you're going to take that, and you're going to multiply it by 0.75. 0.75 separates construction service, the 25% is the construction services, the 75% is the design services. So 4.96 is multiplied by 0.75, okay? And so that brings you 3.720. That's your total design fee, design and construction documents fee. From there, programming, pre-design, and conceptual design is gonna be about 10%.
Of the balance?
Of that value. So
about 3.720?
3.720, so $370,000. Times
10%?
That's what's the 10%?
Mm-hmm. It is 10% of the...
So it's 10% of the 3.720.
Correct.
The value was what?
$370,000.
Thank you.
Sorry, 372. $372,000.
And you use.
Just for clarity, what would this fee be for the $372K?
That is for conceptual design, pre-design, and programming.
Thank you.
Now, you used an 8%. What is the 8% that you use? What does that represent?
It's an industry average. Again, going back to the American Institute of Architects, so they usually will do a study to figure out the level of effort depending on the type of construction. So that value, the 8%, goes up, for example, if it's a particularly difficult type of structure or something that's very high-end. So you will see that 8% migrate upwards, for example, if you're doing a DNA lab, or if you're doing a Louis Vuitton store, or if you're doing, everybody's smiling, if you're doing a renovation on a historic structure, those are when the values start to go up.
But the 8%, do you, just for clarification, is that just a full design portion, or is there like a portion of it broken down for like construction management? Is 8% the...
In the 8%, remember I took out 25%? The 25%
yeah.
is the contract administration.
I see.
So it's...
So you took it out?
I took it out.
Okay, all right. Now, okay, so the cost, if GovGuam were to do it, the conceptual conceptual plan will cost about $370,000, I think is what you said?
Yeah.
All right. I have no further questions. It's been 13 minutes.
Mr. Keeler, any cross-examination?
Yeah, just a few questions. Mr. McHugh, you testified just now that teachers often weren't accurate with their spaces or projected spaces for the rooms. Is that correct?
I think I said teachers teach and designers design. Is that what I said?
Well, my notes indicate that you'd stated that the teachers would get the spaces incorrect at times, and that's where your expertise would come in.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
And that's an accurate statement?
Yeah.
Okay. So, if you could go to Cortec Exhibit 12-3, and we addressed this earlier, the negotiating committee determined in conjunction with DOE and with Chief that Simon Sanchez High School's staff added 4 too many rooms for the English rooms. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, what page on?
Cortec 12-3. And we're looking at the
Exhibit 12.
Exhibit 12, page 3. Paragraph on the bottom.
The final negotiated scope of work contains relatively minor deviations from GDOE's Simon Sanchez High School considerations set forth in the RFP?
Yes. And again, in there, it states that the negotiating committee determined that the considerations that are listed in Cortec 216 or 1216 were 4 too many English rooms. Is that correct?
That's what it says.
Okay. And is it your understanding that Exhibit A, Simon Sanchez High School considerations, was prepared purely by the staff without the assistance of a school planner?
No, that's not my assumption.
Who do you think prepared Exhibit A?
I would be guessing at this point, but I would hope there would be a facility planner who was there to help them when they put their original program together. And then I think that the other team member for them would have been the Department of Public Works. So
you would have a concern if there wasn't an educational facilitator or planner involved in the process?
Yes.
Thank you. No further questions.
Mr. Agee, your witness for cross-examination.
No, we don't have any questions.
Ms. Tang?
Nothing further.
Mr. McKeough, thank you for coming again. And I'm going to release you
Please hold on to applause. We're not done. Thank you for coming again. I'm going to have to direct that you not discuss your testimony with any of the parties, any third parties, until the proceedings have concluded. Understand that?
I understand.
You are excused.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We should meet more often at this time. That's just my opinion.
I agree.
In any event, is there anything further until...
Yes, I have a housekeeping matter.
Go ahead.
Okay, so I have an exhibit, and I'm happy to... It's just a... From the procurement record, has a CT number. It's one of the emails from Ms. Pierce to Ms. Benevente, Mr. Benevente. I'd like to have it... I mean, I don't want to have to put him on, say, is this, you know...
Is it part of the procurement
record? Yes, but I would like to mark it so that everybody knows where it is.
Okay, but it wasn't given to a witness, was it?
No.
Okay, then it's not necessary.
Okay, but I can use it. I just want to make sure
You can cite. Remember, the only...
I just want to make sure I understand
the rules. The big difference from court, I guess, is if it's part of the procurement record, it's already part of the record in the map. I'm only requiring the parties to mark them as exhibits so that if we need to make a transcript of this and somebody, we know when somebody says, all right, I was looking at exhibit A, we know what exhibit A was. And there's
okay.
A copy of it. That's all. So if you're not going to show it to a witness, it's not necessary.
I just want to clarify that.
But you certainly could cite it in, let's say, Remedies Group, for example. Okay.
Yeah.
Is there any other housekeeping?
No.
No? Okay, so we're going to recess. We will reconvene at 9:30 a.m.
Thank you.
On Friday. Thank you. Thank
we're
you.
Off the record.
What? I was watching my time.
We're off the record at 4:01 p.m.
Well, I was ready to go off.